If you go to the website of the Drug Policy Alliance, you can find a page that lists several points about marijuana, including the statement that marijuana is the most commonly used drug in the world. Ethan Nadelman's the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. The group is based in the other Washington. It supports marijuana legalization. Even though pot's now legal in this Washington, Nadelman says the politics of pot are changing so fast that he did not anticipate so much statewide support.
And I have to say, when Washington and Colorado both voted in November 2012 to legalize marijuana, and both voted with about 55% of the vote, I was stunned at the margins of victory. I mean, I thought we had a decent chance, especially in Washington. But to see marijuana legalization get more votes than President Obama did in Colorado and almost as many votes as he did in Washington State, I mean, this was not a squeaker. This was a major victory.
Here in this state and in Colorado, actually, the experiment with marijuana legalization is obviously still in its infancy. We don't really know how it's all going to work out, but you guys are obviously tracking it. What are you seeing so far? Kind of what were your hopes and are they being realized?
For us, we look at three jurisdictions. We look at Colorado, Washington, and Uruguay, because Uruguay became the first country in the world this past December to vote to legalize marijuana, more or less like Colorado and Washington. So you see, Colorado's the first one to roll out, and that seems to be going fairly well. They, of course, have a much more extensive experience having regulated at the state level the medical marijuana dispensaries. Washington and Uruguay, less experience in that regard. So I think Washington is going to be looking awfully good come 6 months from now, 9 months from now. But at this point, we have to see how it all works out.
And one of your main issues is that drug policy nationally, including marijuana policy, really doesn't work out, especially in poorer communities. What are you getting at there?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when you look at the surveys and when you know that in any city in America, if you randomly stop 100 young black kids, 100 brown kids, and 100 white kids and look in their pockets, roughly the same percent will have a little weed in their pocket. In fact, the black kids might be a little less. But in every city in America, the black kids are three times, five, up to 10 times more likely to be arrested and get a criminal record than the white kids. And so I think that's really come home hard for a lot of people. The basic element of unfairness that some people are getting arrested and getting criminal records for things that large numbers of people are doing and getting away with.
And again, I mean, these experiments are effectively in their infancy, but what are you seeing so far? Are you seeing any changes when it comes to arrest rates, changes when it comes to incarceration rates?
Well, the principal things we're seeing is that there was some fear that because the ballot initiatives and some of the other sorts of legislation that's passed on decriminalization applied only to 21-year-old and older, there was a fear that maybe the cops would double down and go after the kids who were 18 to 21. In fact, we're seeing the opposite. The cops seem to be relaxing on the younger group as well. So that's a lot of relief. We see on the issue about whether or not the police are giving out more summons or things like that. Well, once again, Colorado has just begun to roll out, so it's really hard to say at this point.
Ethan Nadelman's executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. They support drug reform, including marijuana legalization here in Washington and in Colorado and some other states. It's going to be on the ballot this fall. And of course, critics of pot legalization here, critics in those states warn that teen drug use would go up if pot became legal. What are you seeing?
Well, we're not seeing much of any evidence. I mean, it's too soon, of course, to tell. But my basic guess is we're not going to see any real significant increase in adolescent marijuana use. And I say that for this reason. If you survey the country, who's got the best access to marijuana in the country? It's young people. It's teenagers. 10 years ago, who had the best access to marijuana? Young people. 20 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago, 10, 20, 30 years from now, it's young people, right? 80% of all teenagers say in surveys that they can easily get marijuana if they want to. So I don't think marijuana legalization for adults is going to make it any more available to them. Now, I do think marijuana consumption will increase, but I don't think it's going to be among young people. I think it's going to be among people in their 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. And 90s. It's going to be people saying that having a little puff or a little bite off a marijuana edible, you know, they prefer to the sleeping pill, or they prefer to the drink at the end of the day, or it helps with their diabetes or their arthritis or their aches and pains, or maybe they enjoy it in the context of their intimate relationship with their husband or wife. I mean, that's, I think, where you're going to see marijuana use increase. And I think to the extent it increases in that group, it's going to be associated with a decrease in consumption of alcohol and pharmaceutical drugs.
There is a new study out talking about how marijuana can potentially lower IQ. it's looking at teens, but it says these effects could persist into later in life, something like 8 points. A lot of our listeners may be feeling a little bit dumber this morning having heard that story.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
You know,
or smarter because they're better informed.
It's amazing the way those IQ studies get spun. It was a study out of New Zealand about a year ago, actually. And I think what you're referring to is the head of National Institute on Health just referred to it recently. And basically what you find is that if you are a heavy user of marijuana as an adolescent, and you continue to be a heavy user throughout adulthood, that you see a reduction in IQ. But interestingly, among people who are heavy users as adolescents and then either moderate or stop their use, you don't see that effect. And conversely, among people who did not use as adolescents but are heavy users when they get older, you don't see that effect. So what you see is any time a study comes out on marijuana that scares people, and instantly the federal government, National Institute on Drug Abuse, which pays for a lot of this stuff, they all sensationalize this, put the press out. And of course, the large majority of studies which show little to no negative impact about marijuana, basically those are not being promoted by our government.
But, you know, you got a study like that saying an 8-point drop in IQ, even if we don't know for sure and the science isn't in, if you saw an 8-point drop as a result of lead exposure, certainly our audience would hear that and be concerned about it, whether or not the evidence was in. Shouldn't they treat this the same way? Or why shouldn't they treat this the same way?
Well, the thing, because what happens is that headline gets publicized.
Right.
And then the subsequent study, which casts doubt on the methodology of that study and on the findings, unfortunately, that one does not get publicized. The small print that you have to be a heavy user as an adolescent and then continue to be a heavy user as an adult, and it doesn't apply to any other category, that gets lost in the small print. So what I get concerned about is all sorts of people go, oh my God, I smoked some weed, my IQ is going to drop 8 points, I'm feeling dumb this morning, it must be because of the weed I smoked. And in fact, that's just a myth. It's one reason we had the drug war, was because these kind of myths got promoted by the government, picked up by the media, people got scared.
Right.
So it's really important when you see a little headline like that, not look at it skeptically, especially when with your own mind and your own eyes, you inevitably know huge numbers of people who smoked weed, and they don't seem any dumber. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Ethan Nadelman is executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, and I want to end here by asking you whether or not you think ultimately or when we're going to see an end to the illegal pot trade, because that's one of the things that I think people that support pot legalization hope will eventually happen.
The thing you have to keep in mind is that even when we repealed alcohol prohibition in 1933, right, many towns remained dry. The state of Mississippi, I think, stayed dry until 1961. You had bootleggers who tried to stay in, continuing to market stuff. You had organized crime trying to get into the distribution channels. So I don't know that we're ever going to eliminate the illegal marijuana trade. Washington and Colorado and Uruguay have begun this process. Hopefully Oregon and Alaska later this year will follow suit. I think in 2016 we'll see a lot more states move in that direction. But it's going to take a long time before you can move a market that's been entirely illegal for 70 or 80 years, in some respects 100 years, into a legal environment. What I'm ultimately fighting for is that one day the next generation will look back on the marijuana wars and marijuana prohibitions of today the same way that we today look back on alcohol prohibition and say, what the hell was that all about?
So how much has Washington's decision to legalize marijuana changed the debate nationally, do you think? And what do you see happening moving forward politically with recreational marijuana?
I mean, that made the whole thing real for the rest of the country. What you see is a 10-point jump in support for legalizing marijuana and a more than 10-point drop in opposition between the fall of 2012 and late 2013. There was something about what Colorado and Washington did that just made the whole thing real for everybody. And those 10-point jumps are across the board. So liberals jump from 60 to 70%, or young people are from 60 to 70%. Conservatives jump from 30 to 40%. We're seeing even in the South, public opinion polls in Texas and Florida and Louisiana, as well as I think Ohio. I mean, conservative states now showing more people in favor of legalizing marijuana than keeping it criminal.
And this is nationally when it comes to the polls. Why are marijuana activists focusing much of their attention still out west, states like Alaska and Oregon looking like they could be the next ones potentially to legalize pot?
Well, the major reason is that only half the states have the ballot initiative process, and most of those are the western states. So virtually, if you look at what we did with medical marijuana back in the mid-90s, started with California in 96, then went to Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Nevada, and Maine was the one outlier, all of which had the initiative process. Typically, the public are ahead of the politicians on an issue like this. So you didn't see Hawaii become the seventh or eighth state to legalize medical marijuana until six or seven states had already done it. So I think ditto with marijuana legalization. Hopefully Oregon and Alaska this year. And then in 2016, you know, keep your eye on Massachusetts and Maine. Keep your eye on Nevada. You know, and then maybe we'll get a surprise like Arizona or Missouri or something like that.
Beyond marijuana, what would you like to see? What would the Drug Policy Alliance like to see when it comes to other drugs like heroin or cocaine?
Well, I think the most important thing is that we need to stop criminalizing simple drug use and drug possession. It's what we refer to by shorthand as the Portugal model. Back in 2001, Portugal ended the criminalization of all drugs. The markets, the selling, the growing, that remained illegal. But they basically adopted a policy whereby nobody goes to jail for simple drug use or drug possession. And they treat the addiction as seriously as a health issue. Their basic view is if you're really a bad guy, and you know, we'll get you for something else. We don't need to spend taxpayer resources on going after simple people for drug possession. And I'll tell you something, Seattle's been a national leader in that regard as well. You have a program here called LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, which has the support of the Seattle Police Department. It's done amazing work in terms of providing a model in the United States for how to divert people who are caught in possession of drugs to drug treatment and other health services before they even get an arrest on their record. So I think with that, we're not advocating for the full legalization of all these drugs the way alcohol, tobacco, marijuana are, but we need to end the criminalization of drug possession. The other frontier is looking what the Europeans have done with heroin maintenance. Starting in Switzerland 20 years ago, now in Denmark, Germany, Netherlands, the UK, and even Canada, what they're saying to long-term heroin addicts who are tired of living the life on the streets but can't imagine quitting, at risk of overdose and other diseases, involved in crime, if you can't quit, you've tried methadone, you tried buprenorphine, you tried drug-free, you've spent time in jail, okay, come to this clinic and you can get pharmaceutical-grade heroin. And the results have been amazing. People pull out of the criminal market, stop engaging in crime, stop being arrested, get their lives together. And anybody who's ever used heroin for a while knows you're not getting high anymore when you've been using it for years. You're just using it to keep from getting sick. And quite frankly, you can function, even taking heroin daily, if you have a reliable supply at the same dose. So I think in the U.S. we need to start talking about those sorts of alternatives. It's not legalization, but it is an approach that's proven to work.
So things are changing rapidly, as you say. There's also a kind of an emerging backlash to some extent, even against marijuana legalization. What are your internal conversations politically about when the country might be ready to even consider the idea of decriminalizing harder drugs like heroin and cocaine?
Well, they really operate on different tracks. I mean, the marijuana thing, we're now at the point where a couple dozen members of the U.S. Congress have come out in favor. We still don't have a single member of the Senate. There are virtually no governors in favor. Governor Kitzhaber in Oregon recently said he thinks it's inevitable. And obviously, your governor here in Washington and the one in Colorado have followed through in good faith in trying to implement these things. But we see national leadership, elected officials still lagging behind the public. On the other side of things, I think this LEAD model, this law enforcement assisted diversion program that Seattle's pioneered, is really going to become a national model. And that's, I mean, we're already helping to bring people, law enforcement officers, to Seattle to see what you guys are doing. As I said, it's not legalization, doesn't even involve changing any laws. It just means getting the police to deal with drug use and drug addiction in a different way.
Ethan Nadelman is executive director for the Drug Policy Alliance. You're listening to The Record.